Do you think that ordinary human despair is enough? That if you just feel bad enough, something cosmic, or at least miraculous, is bound to come along and rescue you? Damn you. He's going to destroy them. You're just another leper, outcast, unclean, and you don't even know it. His fingers curled like feral claws, and he sprang forward, ripping at the arras as if he were trying to rend a black lie off the stone of the world. The heavy fabric refused to tear in his half-unfingered grasp, but he got it down from the wall. Throwing open the balcony, he wrestled the arras out into the crimson-tainted night and heaved it over the railing. It fell like a dead leaf of winter. I am not Beric. Panting at his effort, he returned to the room, slammed the partition shut against the bloody light. He threw off his robe, put on his own underwear, then extinguished the fires and climbed into bed. But the soft, clean touch of the sheets on his skin gave him no consolation. Chapter 14. The Council of Lords. He awoke in a dull haze which felt like the presage of some thunderhead, some black boil and white fire blaring. Mechanically, he went through the motions of readying himself for the council. Washed, inspected himself, dressed in his own clothes, shaved again. When Banner brought him a tray of food, he ate as if the provender were made of dust and gravel. Then he slipped Atiyaran's knife into his belt, gripped the staff of Baradakis in his left hand, and sat down facing the door to await the summons. Finally, Banner returned to tell him that the time had come. For a few moments, Covenant sat still, holding the blood guard in his half-unseeing gaze and wondering where he could get the courage to go on with this dream. He felt that his face was twisted, but he could not be sure. That the uttermost limit. Get it over with. He touched the hard, hidden metal of his ring to steady himself, then levered his reluctant bones erect. Glaring at the doorway as if it were a threshold into peril, he lumbered through it and started down the corridor. At Banner's commanding back, he moved out of the tower, across the courtyard, then inward and down through the raveled and curiously wrought passages of Revelstone. Eventually, they came through bright-lit halls deep in the mountain to a pair of arching wooden doors. These were closed, sentried by bloodguard, and lining both walls were stone chairs, some man-sized and others large enough for giants. Banner nodded to the sentries. One of them pulled open a door while the other motioned for Banner and Covenant to enter. Banner guided Covenant into the council chamber of the lords. The close was a huge, sunken, circular room with a ceiling high and groined, and tiers of seats set around three-quarters of the space. The door through which Covenant entered was nearly level with the highest seats, as were the only two other doors, both of them small, at the opposite side of the chamber. Below the lowest tier of seats were three levels. On the first, several feet below the gallery, stood a curved stone table, three-quarters round, with its gap toward the large doors and many chairs around its outer edge. Below this, contained within the sea of the table, was the flat floor of the close. And finally, in the center of the floor, lay a broad, round pit of graveling. The yellow glow of the firestones was supported by four huge Lilianril torches, burning without smoke or consumption in their sockets around the upper wall. As Banner took him down the steps toward the open end of the table, Covenant observed the people in the chamber. Saltheart Foamfollower lounged nearby at the table in a massive stone chair. He watched Covenant's progress down the steps and grinned a welcome for his former passenger. Beyond him, the only people at the table were the lords. Directly opposite Covenant, at the head of the table, sat High Lord Prothol. His staff lay on the stone before him. An ancient man and woman were several feet away on either side of him. An equal distance from the woman on her left was Lord Morum, and opposite Morum, down the table from the old man, sat a middle-aged woman. Four blood guard had positioned themselves behind each of the lords. There were only four other people in the close. Beyond the High Lord near the top of the gallery sat the Heartthralls, Birinair and Torm, side by side as if they complemented each other. And just behind them were two more men, one a warrior with a double black diagonal on his breastplate, and the other Tuvor, first mark of the Blood Guard. With so few people in it, the close seemed large, hollow, and cryptic. Banner steered Covenant to the lone chair below the level of the Lord's table and across the pit of graveling from the High Lord. Covenant seated himself stiffly and looked around. He felt that he was uncomfortably far from the Lord's. He feared he would have to shout his message. So he was surprised when Prothol stood and said softly, "Thomas Covenant, be welcome to the Council of Lords." His roomy voice reached Covenant as clearly as if they had been standing side by side. Covenant did not know how to respond. Uncertainly, he touched his right fist to his chest, then extended his arm with his palm open and forward. As his senses adjusted to the close, he began to perceive the presence, the emanating personality and adjudication of the Lords. They gave him an impression of stern vows gladly kept, of wide-ranging and yet single-minded devotion. Prothol stood alone, meeting Covenant's gaze. The High Lord's appearance of white age was modified by the stiffness of his beard and the erectness of his carriage. Clearly he was strong yet, but his eyes were worn with the experience of an asceticism, an abnegation carried so far that it seemed to abrogate his flesh, as if he had been old for so long that now only the power to which he devoted himself preserved him from decrepitude. The two lords who flanked him were not so preserved. They had dull, age-marked skin and wispy hair, and they bowed at the table as if striving against the antiquity of their bones to distinguish between meditation and sleep. Lord Moram Covenant already knew, though now Moram appeared more incisive and dangerous, as if the companionship of his fellow lords whetted his capacities. But the fifth Lord Covenant did not know. She sat squarely and factually at the table, with her blunt, forthright face fixed on him like a defiance.
"Let me make introduction before we begin," the High Lord murmured. "I am Prothol, son of Dwillian, High Lord by the choice of the Council. At my right are Varial Tamaranthamate and Pentil's son, once High Lord."
As he said this, the two ancient lords raised their time-latticed faces and smiled privately at each other.
"And Osandria, daughter of Sandria. At my left, Tamarantha, Varial mate, and Anesta, daughter, and Moram, son of Varial. You know the sea-reach giant, Saltheart, foam follower, and have met the heart-thralls of Lord's Keep. Behind me also are Tuvor, first mark of the Blood Guard, and Garth, war mark of the war word of Lord's Keep. All have the right of presence at the Council of Lords. Do you protest?"
"Protest?" Covenant shook his head dumbly.
"Then we shall begin. It is our custom to honor those who come before us. How may we honor you?"
Again Covenant shook his head.
"I don't want any honor. I made that mistake once already."
After an inquiring pause, the High Lord said,
"Very well."
Turning toward the giant, he raised his voice.
"Hail and welcome, giant of Sea-Reach, Saltheart foam follower, rock brother and inheritor of land's loyalty. The unhomed are a blessing to the land. Stone and sea are deep in life. Welcome whole or hurt, in boon or bane. Ask or give. To any requiring name we will not fail while we have life or power to meet the need. I am High Lord Prothol. I speak in the presence of Revelstone itself."
Foam follower stood to return the salutation.
"Hail, Lord and Earth Friend. I am Saltheart Foam Follower, legate from the Giants of Sea Reach to the Council of Lords. The truth of my people is in my mouth, and I hear the approval of the ancient sacred ancestral stone. Raw earth rock, pure friendship, a handmark of allegiance and fealty in the eternal stone of time. Now is the time for proof and power of troth. Through Giant Woods and Serengrave Flat and Andalane, I bear the name of the ancient promises. Then some of the formality dropped from his manner, and he added with a gay glance at Covenant, and bearing other things as well. My friend Thomas Covenant has promised that a song will be made of my journey. He laughed gently. I am a giant of Sea Reach. Make no short songs for me. His humor drew a chuckle from Lord Morum, and Prothol smiled softly. But Osandria's dour face seemed incapable of laughter, and neither Varial nor Tamarantha appeared to have heard the giant. Foam Follower took his seat, and almost at once Osandria said, as if she were impatient, What is your embassy? Foam Follower sat erect in his chair, and his hands stroked the stone of the table intently. My lords, stone and sea, I am a giant. These matters do not come easily, though easier to me than to any of my kindred, and for that reason I was chosen. But I will endeavor to speak hastily. Please understand me. I was given my embassy in a giant clave lasting 10 days. There was no waste of time. When comprehension is needed, all tales must be told in full. Haste is for the hopeless, we say, and hardly a day has passed since I learned that there is truth in sayings. So it is that my embassy contains much that you would not choose to hear at present. You must know the history of my people, all the sojourn and the loss which brought us ashore here, all the interactions of our peoples since that age, if you are to hear me. But I will forego it. We are the unhomed, adrift in soul and lessened by an unreplenishing seed. We are hungry for our native land. Yet since the time of Damelon, giant friend, we have not surrendered hope, though Soul Crusher himself contrives against us. We have searched the seas and have waited for the omens to come to pass. Foam Follower paused to look thoughtfully at Covenant, then went on, Ah, my lords, omening is curious. So much is said, and so little made clear. It was not home that Damelon foretold for us, but rather an end, a resolution to our loss. Yet that sufficed for us. Sufficed. Well, one hope we have found for ourselves. When spring came to Sea Reach, our questing ships returned and told that at the very limit of their search they came upon an isle that borders the ancient oceans on which we once roamed. The matter is not sure, but our next questers can go directly to this isle and look beyond it for surer signs. Thus across the labyrinth of the seas, we unamaze ourselves. Prothol nodded, and through the perfect acoustics of the close, Covenant could hear the faint rustle of the High Lord's robe. With an air of nearing the crux of his embassy, Foam Follower continued, Yet another hope we received from Damelon, giant friend, High Lord and Heartthew's son. At the heart of his omening was this word. Our exile would end when our seed regained its potency, and the decline of our offspring was reversed. Thus, hope is born of hope, for without any foretelling we would gain heart and courage from any increase in our rare beloved children. And behold, on the night that our ships returned, Waven Hair Hail All, wived to Spar Limb Keelsetter, was taken to her bed and delivered. Stone and sea, my lords, It cripples my tongue to tell this without its full measure of long, giantish gratitude. How can there be joy for people who say everything briefly? Proud wife, clean-limbed, waven hair, gave birth to 3 sons. No longer able to restrain himself, he broke into a chant full of the brave crash of breakers and the tang of salt. To his surprise, Covenant saw that Lord Osandria was smiling, and her eyes caught the golden glow of the graveling damply, eloquent witness to the gladness of the giant's news. But Foam Follower abruptly stopped himself. With a gesture toward Covenant, he said, "Your pardon. You have other matters in your hands. I must bring myself to the bone of my embassy." "Ah, my friend," he said to Covenant, "will you still not laugh for me? I must remember that Damalon promised us an end, not a return home, though I cannot envision any end but home. It may be that I stand in the gloaming of the giants." "Hush, Rock Brother," Lord Tamarantha interrupted. "Do not make evil for your people by uttering such things." Foam Follower responded with a hearty laugh. "Ah, my thanks, Lord Tamarantha. So the wise old giants are admonished by young women. My entire people will laugh when I tell them of this." Tamarantha and Varial exchanged a smile and returned to their semblance of meditation or dozing. When he was done laughing, the giant said, "Well, my lords, to the bone then, stone and sea. Such haste makes me giddy. I have come to ask the fulfillment of the ancient offers. High Lord Lorik Vile Silencer promised that the lords would give us a gift when our hope was ready, a gift to better the chances of our homeward way." "Birinair," said Lord Osandria. High in the gallery behind Prothol, old Birinair stood and replied, "Of course, I am not asleep. Not as old as I look, you know. I hear you." With a broad grin, Foam Follower called, "Hail, Birinair, heart thrall of Lord's Keep and higher brand of the Lilianril. We are old friends, giants and Lilianril." "No need to shout," Birinair returned. "I hear you. Old friends from the time of High Lord Damalon. Never otherwise." "Birinair," Osandria cut in, "does your lore recall the gift promised by Lorik to the giants?"
"Gift? Why not? Nothing amiss with my memory. Where is that whelp, my apprentice?"
"Of course. Lore Lyaril. Gildenload, they call it. There. Keels and rudders for ships. True course. Never becalmed. And strong as stone," he said to Torm. "You grinning Rodamarl to the contrary? I remember."
"Can you accomplish this?" Osandria asked quietly.
"Accomplish?"
Birinair echoed, apparently puzzled.
"Can you make Gildenload keels and rudders for the giants? Has that lore been lost?"
Turning to Foam Follower, Lord Osandria asked, "How many ships will you need?" With a glance at Birinair's upright dignity, Foam Follower contained his humor and replied simply,
7. Perhaps 5. "Can this be done?"
Osandria asked Birinair again, distinctly but without irritation. Covenant's blank gaze followed from speaker to speaker as if they were talking in a foreign language. The heart thrall pulled a small tablet and stylus from his robe and began to calculate, muttering to himself. The scrape of his stylus could be heard throughout the close until he raised his head and said stiffly, "The lore remains. But not easily. The best we can do, of course. And time. It will need time. Bodok glass, it will need time."
"How much time?"
"The best we can do. If we are left alone. Not my fault. I did not lose all the proudest lore of the Lilianril."
40 years.
In a sudden whisper, he added to Foam Follower,
"I am sorry.
40 years. Foam Follower laughed gently. Ah, bravely said, Beren Hare, my friend. 40 years. That does not seem a long time to me.
Turning to High Lord Prothol, he said, My people cannot thank you. Even in Giantish, there are no words long enough. 3 millennia of our loyalty have not been enough to repay 7 Gildenload keels and rudders.
No, protested Prothol. 70 times 7 Gildenload gifts are nothing compared to the great friendship of the Sea Reach Giants. Only the thought that we have aided your return home can fill the emptiness your departure will leave. And our help is 40 years distant. But we will begin at once, and it may be that some new understanding of Kevin's lore will shorten the time.
Echoing, At once, Beren Hare reseated himself.
40 years, Covenant breathed. You don't have 40 years.
Then Osandria said,
Done.
She looked first at Foam Follower, then at High Lord Prothol. When they both nodded to her, she turned on Covenant and said,
Then let us get to the matter of this Thomas Covenant.
Her voice seemed to wet the atmosphere like a distant thunderclap. Smiling to ameliorate Osandria's forthrightness, Morum said,
A stranger called the Unbeliever.
And for good reason, Foam Follower added. The giant's words rang an alarm in Covenant's clouded trepidations, and he looked sharply at Foam Follower. In the giant's cavernous eyes and buttressed forehead, he saw the import of the comment. As clearly as if he were pleading outright, Foam Follower said,
Acknowledge the white gold and use it to aid the land.
Impossible, Covenant replied. The backs of his eyes felt hot with helplessness and belligerence, but his face was as stiff as a marble slab. Abruptly, Lord Osandria demanded, The tapestry from your room was found. Why did you cast it down? Without looking at her, Covenant answered,
It offended me.
Offended? Her voice quivered with disbelief and indignation.
Osandria, Prothol admonished gently, He is a stranger.
She kept the defiance of her face on Covenant, but fell silent. For a moment, no one moved or spoke. Covenant received the unsettling impression that the lords were debating mentally with each other about how to treat him. Then Morum stood, walked around the end of the stone table, and moved back inside the circle until he was again opposite Osandria. There he seated himself on the edge of the table with his staff across his lap and fixed his eyes down on Covenant. Covenant felt more exposed than ever to Morum's scrutiny. At the same time, he sensed that Banner had stepped closer to him, as if anticipating an attack on Morum. Wryly, Lord Morum said, Thomas Covenant, you must pardon our caution. The desecrated moon signifies an evil in the land which we hardly suspected. Without warning, the sternest test of our age appears in the sky, and we are utterly threatened. Yet we do not prejudge you. You must prove your ill, if ill you are. He looked to Covenant for some response, some acknowledgement, but Covenant only stared back emptily. With a slight shrug, the Lord went on,
No. Perhaps it would be well if you began with your message.
Covenant winced, ducked his head like a man harried by vultures. He did not want to recite that message, did not want to remember Kevin's watch, Mithil Stone Down, anything. His guts ached at visions of vertigo. Everything was impossible. How could he retain his outraged sanity if he thought about such things? But Fowl's message had a power of compulsion. He had borne it like a wound in his mind too long to repudiate it now. Before he could muster any defense, it came over him like a convulsion. In a tone of irremediable contempt, he said, These are the words of Lord Fowl the Despiser. Say to the Council of Lords, and to the High Lord Prothol, son of Dwillian, that the uttermost limit of their span of days upon the land is 7 times 7 years from this present time. Before the end of those days are numbered, I will have the command of life and death in my hand. And as a token that what I say is the one word of truth, tell them this. Drool Rockworm, Cave White of Mount Thunder, has found the Staff of Law, which was lost 10 times 100 years ago by Kevin at the Ritual of Desecration. Say to them that the task appointed to their generation is to regain the staff. Without it, they will not be able to resist me for 7 years, and my complete victory will be achieved 6 times 7 years earlier than it would be else. As for you, Groveler, do not fail with this message. If you do not bring it before the council, then every human in the land will be dead before 10 seasons have passed. You do not understand, but I tell you, Drool Rockworm has the staff, and that is a cause for terror. He will be enthroned at Lord's Keep in 2 years if the message fails. Already, the Cave Whites are marching to his call. And wolves and Urviles of the Demondim answer the power of the staff. But war is not the worst peril. Drool delves ever deeper into the dark roots of Mount Thunder, Graven Threndor, peak of the Fire Lions. And there are banes buried in the deeps of the earth too potent and terrible for any mortal to control. They would make of the universe a hell forever. But such a bane Drool seeks. He searches for the Ill-Earth Stone. If he becomes its master, there will be woe for low and high alike until time itself falls. Do not fail with my message, Groveler. You have met Drool. Do you relish dying in his hands? Covenant's heart lurched with the force of his loathing for the words, the tone. But he was not done. One word more, a final caution. Do not forget whom to fear at the last. I have had to be content with killing and torment, but now my plans are laid and I have begun. I shall not rest until I have eradicated hope from the earth. Think on that and be dismayed. As he finished, he heard fear and abhorrence flare in the close as if ignited by his involuntary peroration. Hellfire, hellfire, he moaned, trying to clear his gaze of the darkness from which Foul's contempt had sprung. Unclean! Prothol's head was bowed, and he clenched his staff as if he were trying to wring courage from it. Behind him, Tuvor and Warmark Garth stood in attitudes of martial readiness. Oddly, Varial and Tamarantha doddered in their seats as if dozing, unaware of what had been said. But Osandria gaped at Covenant as if he had stabbed her in the heart. Opposite her, Morum stood erect, head high and eyes closed, with his staff braced hard against the floor. And where his metal met the stone, a hot blue flame burned. Foam Follower hunched in his seat. His huge hands clutched a stone chair. His shoulders quivered, and suddenly the chair snapped. At the noise, Osandria covered her face with her hands, gave one stricken cry, Melancurian Apatha! The next instant, she dropped her hands and resumed her stony, amazed stare at Covenant. And he shouted, Unclean, as if he were agreeing with her. Laugh, Covenant. Foam Follower whispered hoarsely. You have told us the end of all things. Now help us. Laugh. Covenant replied dully. You laugh. Joy is in the ears that hear. I can't do it. To his astonishment, Foam Follower did laugh. He lifted his head and made a strangled, garish noise in his throat that sounded like sobbing. But in a moment the sound loosened, clarified, slowly took on the tone of indomitable humor. The terrible exertion appalled Covenant. As Foam Follower laughed, the first shock of dismay passed from the council. Gradually, Prothol raised his head.
"The unhomed are a blessing to the land," he murmured.
Morum sagged, and the fire between his staff and the floor went out. Osandria shook her head, sighed, passed her hands through her hair. Again, Covenant sensed a kind of mental melding from the lords. Without words, they seemed to join hands, share strength with each other. Sitting alone and miserable, Covenant waited for them to question him. And as he waited, he struggled to recapture all the refusals on which his survival depended. Finally, the lords returned their attention to him. The flesh of Prothol's face seemed to droop with weariness, but his eyes remained steady, resolute.
"Now, unbeliever," he said softly, "you must tell us all that has happened to you. We must know how Lord Fowl's threats are embodied."
"Now," Covenant echoed, twisting in his chair. He could hardly resist a desire to clutch at his ring. Dark memories beat at his ears, trying to break down his defenses. Shortly, everyone in the close was looking at him. Tossing his words down as if he were discarding flawed bricks, he began.
"I come from someplace else. I was brought to Kevin's watch. I don't know how. First I got a look at Drool. Then Fowl left me on the watch. They seemed to know each other."
"And the staff of law?" Prothol asked.
"Drool had a staff. All carved up with metal ends like yours. I don't know what it was."
Prothol shrugged the doubt away, and grimly Covenant forced himself to describe, without any personal mention of himself, any reference to Lena or Triok or Baradakis, the events of his journey. When he spoke of the murdered way in him, Osandria's breath hissed between her teeth, but the lords made no other response. Then, after he mentioned the visit to Soaring Woodhelven of a malicious stranger, possibly a raver, Morum asked intently, "Did the stranger use a name?"
"He said his name was Jehanam."
"Ah,
and what was his purpose?"
"How should I know?" Covenant rasped, trying to conceal his falsehood with belligerence.
"I don't know any ravers."
Morum nodded noncommittally, and Covenant went on to relate his and Atiyaran's progress through Andalane. He avoided gruffly any reference to the wrong which had attacked him through his boots. But when he came to the celebration of spring, he faltered.
"The wraiths,"
he ached silently. The rage and horror of that night were still in him, still vivid to his raw heart.
"Covenant, help them."
"How could I? It's madness. I am not
Beric."
With an effort that made his throat hurt, as if his words were too sharp to pass through it, he said,
"The celebration was attacked by Urvyles. We escaped. Some of the wraiths were saved by one of the unfettered," Atiyaran said. "Then the moon turned red. Then we got to the river and met Foam Follower. Atiyaran decided to go back home. How the hell much longer do I have to put up with this?"
Unexpectedly, Lord Tamarantha raised her nodding head.
"Who will go?"
she asked toward the ceiling of the close.
"It has not yet been determined that anyone will go,"
Prothol replied in a gentle voice.
"Nonsense," she sniffed.
Tugging at a thin wisp of hair behind her ear, she coaxed her old bones erect.
"This is too high a matter for caution. We must act. Of course I trust him. He has a higher brand's staff, does he not?
What higher brand would give a staff without sure reason? And look at it, one end blackened. He has fought with it, at the celebration, if I do not mistake. Ah, the poor wraiths. That was ill. Ew.
Looking across at Varial, she said,
Come. We must prepare.
Varial worked himself to his feet. Taking Tamarantha's arm, he left the close through one of the doors behind the High Lord. After a respectful pause for the old lords, Osandria leveled her stare at Covenant and demanded,
How did you gain that staff?
Baradakis, the higher brand, gave it to me.
Why?
Her tone sparked his anger. He said distinctly he wanted to apologize for distrusting me.
How did you teach him to trust you?
Damnation. I passed his bloody test of truth. Carefully, Lord Moram asked,
Unbeliever, why did the higher brand of Soaring Woodhelven desire to test you?
Again, Covenant felt compelled to lie. Jehanam made him nervous. He tested everyone.
Did he also test Atiaran?
What do you think?
I think, Foam Follower interposed firmly, that Atiaran Trailmate of Mithilstone Down would not require any test of truth to demonstrate her fidelity.
This affirmation produced a pause, during which the lords looked at each other as if they had reached an impasse. Then High Lord Prothol said sternly,
Thomas Covenant, you are a stranger, and we have had no time to learn your ways. But we will not surrender our sense of what is right to you. It is clear that you have spoken falsehood. For the sake of the land, you must answer our questions. Please tell us why the higher brand Baradakis gave to you the test of truth, but not to Atiaran, your companion.
No.
Then tell us why Atiaran Trailmate chose not to accompany you here. It is rare for a person born of the land to stop short of Revelstone.
No.
Why do you refuse?
Covenant glared, seething up at his interrogators. They sat above him like judges with the power of outcasting in their hands. He wanted to defend himself with shouts, curses, but the lord's intent eyes stopped him. He could see no contempt in their faces. They regarded him with anger, fear, disquietude, with offended love for the land, but no contempt. Very softly, he said,
Don't you understand? I'm trying to get out of telling you an even bigger lie. If you keep pushing me, we'll all suffer.
The High Lord met his irate, supplicating gaze for a moment, then sighed catarrhally.
Very well. You make matters difficult for us. Now we must deliberate. Please leave the close. We will call for you in a short time.
Covenant stood, turned on his heel, started up the steps toward the big doors. Only the sound of his boots against the stone marked the silence until he had almost reached the doors. Then he heard Foam Follower say as clearly as if his own heart uttered the words,
Atiaran Trailmate blamed you for the slaughter of the wraiths.
He froze, waiting in blank dread for the giant to continue. But Foam Follower said nothing more. Trembling, Covenant passed through the doors and moved awkwardly to sit in one of the chairs along the wall. His secret felt so fragile within him that he could hardly believe it was still intact.
I am not.
When he looked up, he found Banner standing before him. The Bloodguard's face was devoid of expression, but it did not seem uncontemptuous. Its flat ambiguity appeared capable of any response, and now it implied a judgment of Covenant's weakness, his disease. Impelled by anger and frustration, Covenant muttered to himself, Keep moving.
survive. Banner, he growled. Morum seems to think we should get to know each other. He told me to ask you about the Blood Guard. Banner shrugged as if he were impervious to any question. Your people. The Haruchai, Banner nodded, live up in the mountains. You came to the land when Kevin was High Lord. How long ago was that?
Centuries before the desecration.
The Blood Guard's alien tone seemed to suggest that units of time like years and decades had no significance.
2,000 years.
2,000 years. Thinking of the giants, Covenant said, that's why there's only 500 of you left. Since you came to the land, you've been dying off. The Blood Guard have always numbered 500. That is the vow. The Haruchai are more. He gave the name a tonal lilt that suited his voice. More. They live in the mountains as before. Then how do you... You say that as if you haven't been back there for a long time. Again, Banner nodded slightly. How do you maintain your 500 here? I haven't seen any... Banner interrupted dispassionately. When one of the Blood Guard is slain, his body is sent into the mountains through Guard's Gap, and another of the Haruchai comes to take his place in the vow. Is slain? Covenant wondered. Haven't you been home since? Don't you visit your... Do you have a wife?
At one time...
Banner's tone did not vary, but something in his inflectionlessness made Covenant feel that the question was important. At one time, he pursued. What happened to her?
She has been dead.
An instinct warned Covenant, but he went on, spurred by the fascination of Banner's alien, inflexible solidity.
How long ago did she die?
Without a flicker of hesitation, the Blood Guard replied, 2,000 years.
What?
For a long moment, Covenant gaped in astonishment, whispering to himself as if he feared that Banner could hear him.
That's impossible. That's impossible.
In an effort to control himself, he blinked dumbly.
What is this?
Yet in spite of his amazement, Banner's claim carried conviction. That flat tone sounded incapable of dishonesty, of even misrepresentation. It filled Covenant with horror, with nauseated sympathy. In sudden vision, he glimpsed the import of Morum's description, made by their pledged loyalty ascetic, womanless, and old.
Barren.
How could there be any limit to a barrenness which had already lasted for 2,000 years?
How,
he croaked,
how old are you?
I came to the land with the first Haruchai when Kevin was young in High Lordship. Together we first uttered the vow of service. Together we called upon the Earth Power to witness our commitment. Now, we do not return home until we have been slain.
2,000 years,
Covenant mumbled. Until we have been slain.
That's impossible.
None of this is happening. In his confusion, he tried to tell himself that what he heard was like the sensitivity of his nerves, further proof of the land's impossibility. But it did not feel like proof. It moved him as if he had learned that Banner suffered from a rare form of leprosy. With an effort, he breathed,
"Why?"
Flatly, Banner said, "When we came to the land, we saw wonders. Giants, Ranihan, Revelstone, lords of such power that they declined to wage war with us lest we be destroyed. In answer to our challenge, they gave to the Haruchai gifts so precious." He paused,
appeared to muse for a moment over private memories. Therefore, we swore the vow. We could not equal that generosity in any other way.
Is that your answer to death?
Covenant struggled with his sympathy, tried to reduce what Banner said to manageable proportions.
Is that how things are done in the land? Whenever you're in trouble, you just do the impossible? Like Beric?
We have sworn the vow. The vow is life. Corruption is death.
But for 2,000 years,
Covenant protested.
Damnation! It isn't even decent. Don't you think you've done enough?
Without expression, the Blood Guard replied, You cannot corrupt us.
Corrupt you? I don't want to corrupt you. You can go on serving those lords until you wither for all I care. I'm talking about your life, Banner. How long do you go on serving without just once asking yourself if it's worth it? Pride, or at least sanity, requires that. Hellfire.
He could not conceive how even a healthy man remained unsuicidal in the face of so much existence.
It isn't like salad dressing. You can't just spoon it around. You're human. You weren't born to be immortal.
Banner shrugged impassively. What does immortality signify? We are the Blood Guard. We know only life or death, the vow or corruption. An instant passed before Covenant remembered that corruption was the Blood Guard name for Lord Fowl. Then he groaned, Well, of course I understand. You live forever because your pure, sinless service is utterly and indomitably unballasted by any weight or dross of mere human weakness.
Ha! The advantages of clean living.
We do not know. Banner's awkward tone echoed strangely. Kevin saved us. How could we guess what was in his heart? He sent us all into the mountains. Into the mountains. We questioned, but he gave the order. He charged us by our vow. We knew no reason to disobey. How could we know? We would have stood by him at the desecration, stood by or prevented. But he saved us. The Blood Guard. We. Who swore to preserve his life at any cost.
Saved.
Covenant breathed painfully. He could feel the unintended cruelty of Kevin's act.
So now you don't know whether all these years of living are right or wrong,
he said distantly.
How do you stand it? Maybe your vow is mocking you.
There is no accusation which can raise its finger against us, Banner averred. But for an instant his dispassion sounded a shade less immaculate.
No, you do all that yourself.
In response, Banner blinked slowly, as if neither blame nor exculpation carried meaning to the ancient perspective of his devotion. A moment later, one of the sentries beckoned Covenant toward the close. Trepidation constricted his heart. His horrified sympathy for Banner drained his courage. He did not feel able to face the lords, answer their demands. He climbed to his feet as if he were tottering, then hesitated. When Banner motioned him forward, he said in a rush, Tell me one more thing. If your wife were still alive, would you go to visit her and then come back here? Could you? He faltered.
Could you bear it?
The Blood Guard met his imploring gaze squarely, but thoughts seemed to pass like shadows behind his countenance before he said softly,
No.
Breathing heavily as if he were nauseated, Covenant shambled through the door and down the steps toward the yellow immolation of the graveling pit. Prothol, Morum, and Osandria, Foam Follower, the 4 Blood Guard, the 4 spectators, all remained as he had left them. Under the ominous expectancy of their eyes, he seated himself in the lone chair below the Lord's table. He was shivering as if the firestones radiated cold rather than heat. When the High Lord spoke, the age rattle in his voice seemed worse than before.
Thomas Covenant, if we have treated you wrongly, we will beg your pardon at the proper time. But we must resolve our doubt of you. You have concealed much that we must know. However, on one matter we have been able to agree. We see your presence in the land in this way. While delving under Mount Thunder, Druul Rockworm found the lost Staff of Law. Without aid, he would require many years to master it. But Lord Fowl the Despiser learned of Druul's discovery and agreed for his own purposes to teach the Cavewight the uses of the staff. Clearly he did not wrest the staff from Druul. Perhaps he was too weak, or perhaps he feared to use a tool not made for his hand, or perhaps he has some terrible purpose which we do not grasp. But again, it is clear that Lord Fowl induced Druul to use the staff to summon you to the land. Only the Staff of Law has such might. And Druul could not have conceived or executed that task without deep Lord aid. You were brought to the land at Lord Fowl's behest. We can only pray that there were other powers at work as well. But that does not tell us why, said Morum intently. If the carrying of messages were Lord Fowl's only purpose, he had no need of someone from beyond the land, and no need to protect you from Druul, as he did when he bore you to Kevin's watch, and as I believe he attempted to do by sending his raver to turn you from your path toward Andalane. No. You are our sole guide to the Despiser's true intent. Why did he call someone from beyond the land? And why you? In what way do you serve his designs? Panting, Covenant locked his jaws and said nothing. Let me put the matter another way, Prothol urged. The tale you have told us contains evidence of truth. Few living know that the ravers were at one time named Harim, Sheol, and Jehanam. And we know that one of the unfettered has been studying the wraiths of Andalane for many years. Unwillingly, Covenant remembered the hopeless courage of the animals that had helped the unfettered one to save him in Andalane. They had hurled themselves into their own slaughter with desperate and futile ferocity. He gritted his teeth, tried to close his ears to the memory of their dying. Prothol went on without a pause, and we know that the Lomelia Lore test of truth is sure, if the one tested does not surpass the tester. But the Despiser also knows, snapped Osandria. He could know that an unfettered one lived and studied in Andalane. He could have prepared this tale and taught it to you. If he did, she enunciated darkly, then the matters on which you have refused to speak are precisely those on which your story would fail. Why did the higher brand of Soaring Wood Helven test you? How was the testing done? Who have you battled with that staff? What instinct turned Atiaran Trailmate against you? You fear to reply, because then we will see the Despiser's handiwork. Authoritatively, High Lord Prothol rattled, Thomas Covenant, you must give us some token that your tale is true. Token? Covenant groaned. Give us proof that we should trust you. You have uttered a doom upon our lives. That we believe. But perhaps it is your purpose to lead us from the true defense of the land. Give us some token, unbeliever. Through his quavering,
Covenant felt the impenetrable circumstance of his dream clamp shut on him, deny every desire for hope or independence. He climbed to his feet, strove to meet the crisis erect. As a last resort, he grated to Foam Follower, "Tell them." Atiyaran blamed herself for what happened at the celebration, because she ignored the warnings. "Tell them." He burned at Foam Follower, willing the giant to support his last chance for autonomy, and after a grave moment, the giant said, "My friend Thomas Covenant speaks truth in his way." Atiyaran Trailmate believed the worst of herself. "Nevertheless," Osandria snapped, "perhaps she blamed herself for guiding him to the celebration, for enabling. Her pain does not approve him." And Prothol insisted in a low voice, "Your token, Covenant. The necessity for judgment is upon us. You must choose between the land and the land's despiser. Covenant, help them." "No," he gasped hoarsely, whirling to face the High Lord. "It wasn't my fault. Don't you see that this is just what Fowl wants you to do?" Prothol stood, braced his weight on his staff. His stature seemed to expand in power as he spoke. "No, I do not see. You are closed to me. You ask to be trusted, but you refuse to show trustworthiness. No. I demand the token by which you refuse us. I am Prothol, son of Dwilion, High Lord by the choice of the Council. I demand." For one long instant, Covenant remained suspended in decision. His eyes fell to the graveling pit. "Covenant, help them." With a groan, he remembered how much Atiyaran had paid to place him where he stood now. "Her pain does not approve." In counterpoint, he heard Banner saying, 2,000 years. Life or death, we do not know. But the face he saw in the Firestones was his wife's. "Joe," he cried, "was one sick body more important than everything?" He tore open his shirt as if he were trying to bare his heart. From the patch of Klingor on his chest, he snatched his wedding band, jammed it onto his ring finger, raised his left fist like a defiance. But he was not defiant. "I can't use it," he shouted lornly, as if the ring were still a symbol of marriage, not a talisman of wild magic. "I'm a leper." Astonishment rang in the close, clanging changes in the air. The heart thralls and Garth were stunned. Prothol shook his head as if he were trying to wake up for the first time in his life. Intuitive comprehension broke like a bow wave on Morum's face, and he snapped to his feet in stiff attention. Grinning gratefully, Foam Follower stood as well. Lord Osandria also joined Morum, but there was no relief in her eyes. Covenant could see her shouldering her way through a throng of confusions to the crux of the situation. Could see her thinking, save or damn, save or damn. She alone among the lords appeared to realize that even this token did not suffice. Finally, the High Lord mastered himself. "Now at last, we know how to honor you," he breathed. "Erlord Thomas Covenant, unbeliever and white gold wielder, be welcome and true. Forgive us, for we did not know. Yours is the wild magic that destroys peace, and power is at all times a dreadful thing." The Lord saluted Covenant as if they wished to both invoke and ward against him, then together began to sing. "There is wild magic graven in every rock, contained for white gold to unleash or control. Gold, rare metal, not born of the land, nor ruled, limited, subdued by the law with which the land was created. For the land is beautiful, as if it were a strong soul's dream of peace and harmony, and beauty is not possible without discipline. And the law which gave birth to time is the land's creator's self-control. But keystone, rather, pivot, crux for the anarchy out of which time was made. And with time, earth, and with earth, those who people it. Wild magic restrained in every particle of life, and unleashed or controlled by gold, not born of the land, because that power is the anchor of the arch of life that spans and masters time. And white, white gold, not ebon, ichor, incarnadine, viridian, because white is the hue of bone, structure of flesh, discipline of life. This power is a paradox, because power does not exist without law, and wild magic has no law. And white gold is a paradox, because it speaks for the bone of life, but has no part of the land. And he who wields white wild magic gold is a paradox, for he is everything and nothing, hero and fool, potent, helpless, and with the one word of truth or treachery, he will save or damn the earth, because he is mad and sane, cold and passionate, lost and found. It was an involuted song, curiously harmonized, with no resolving cadences to set the hearers at rest. And in it Covenant could hear the vulture wings of Foul's voice, saying, "You have might, but you will never know what it is. You will not be able to fight me at the last." As the song ended, he wondered if his struggling served or defied the despiser's manipulations. He could not tell, but he hated and feared the truth in Foul's words. He cut into the silence which followed the Lord's hymning. "I don't know how to use it. I don't want to know. That's not why I wear it. If you think I'm some kind of personified redemption, it's a lie. I'm a leper." "Ah, Urlord Covenant," Prothol sighed as the Lords and Foam Follower reseated themselves. "Let me say again, please forgive us. We understand much now why you were summoned, why the Hirebrand Baradakas treated you as he did, why Druel Rockworm attempted to ensnare you at the celebration of spring. Please understand in turn that knowledge of the ring is necessary to us. Your semblance to Beric Halfhand is not gratuitous. But, sadly, we cannot tell you how to use the white gold. Alas, we know little enough of the lore we already possess. And I fear that if we held and comprehended all 7 wards and words, the wild magic would still be beyond us. Knowledge of white gold has come down to us through the ancient prophecies. Foretellings, as Saltheart Foam Follower has observed, which say much but clarify little. But we comprehend nothing of the wild magic. Still, the prophecies are clear about your importance. So I name you Urlord, a sharer of all the matters of the council until you depart from us. We must trust you." Pacing back and forth now on the spur of his conflicting needs, Covenant growled, "Baradakas said just about the same thing." "By hell! You people terrify me. When I try to be responsible, you pressure me. And when I collapse, you're not asking the right questions. You don't have the vaguest notion of what a leper is, and it doesn't even occur to you to inquire. That's why Fowl chose me for this. Because I can't. Damnation. Why don't you ask me about where I come from? I've got to tell you. The world I come from doesn't allow any